everyone. I do not have any relationships to disclose. So for this study, we wanted to look at three components of how state consumer protection law might be used to protect teens from predatory soda marketing. So we first looked at adolescent brain development to see what characteristics of the teen brain might impact their decisions as consumers. We then looked at how soda is marketed to teens, and then how the law has treated teens as consumers. And so a few things about the adolescent brain. We've all seen teen drivers. They can be very scary. And I thought this quote really summed up what we saw when we looked at the writing about adolescent brain and psychosocial development. The mismatch in excitatory drive and inhibitory control during early adolescence has been likened to starting the engine with an unskilled driver. So teens, their prefrontal cortex, which is critical for inhibitory control, is not fully developed. And this is happening at the same time that they're experiencing elevated hormonal levels and receptivity that allows stress or emotion to disable their already underdeveloped inhibitory systems. At the same time, they're dealing with psychosocial challenges of forming personal identity and fitting in socially with their peers. So teens do make decisions, and they're reasonable or rational from the perspective, from their perspective in their developmental phase. Their decision making is characterized by impulsive behavior. So this is some marketing from Coke that targets youth. Everyone's happy place is different. Yours is seconds away, right? Right there, ready to go at a moment's notice. Decision-making, their research also shows that they engage in thrill-seeking and behavior to increase status amongst their peers. This is all compounded by their lack of temporal perspective, meaning that they lack foresight, and they focus on short-term rewards versus long-term risks. So the reasonable teenager, and reasonable is a legal term that's brought to bear when teens go into court as consumers, is making decisions. They're making risk-reward calculations. They're just not necessarily in their long-term interest. So why should we care about soda marketing to teens? This is from a 2011 presentation that Coke made, I'm assuming to an investor audience. It was entitled Advancing Our Momentum in North America. They see teens as their target core demographic. They're very open about targeting to them. Teens are not protected by self-regulatory frameworks that are administered by the Better Business Bureau or the American Beverage Association. They're not covered by the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act. And there are really some alarming, very alarming trends in adolescent health status if you look at the literature. Teens are highly susceptible to marketing, and you don't have to take my word for it. There's a whole body of research about this. And soda companies know this. So this is a quote from a PepsiCo executive that manages their Gatorade portfolio. When you're in your teen years is when you develop your sort of deep emotional connection with things. So it's such an important time for us, Pepsi, to begin the brand relationship with the consumer. We've always seen them, meaning teens, as our focus. So why are we seeing campaigns like Live For Now, which is Pepsi's most recent teen-targeted campaign? Coke has its own, which I'll touch on. When asked about why they developed the Live For Now campaign, Brad Jakeman, who's the international executive for Pepsi, said, quote, "The category is in decline," meaning full sugar soda, "in this country. It's lost the cool quotient. If there's any brand that can inspire the category again, it's Pepsi." So Coke has been a bit more bullish about teens' perception of their products. This is from a 2011 presentation, and they're representing that their cool quotient is actually on the rise. But they're not taking any chances. This year they launched their Awe Effect campaign, which is totally digital, and they openly tout it as completely teen-focused. So the key campaign elements of these marketing campaigns I thought was embodied nicely in this montage. So you see youth, music, that's Nicki Minaj, who's a pop singer in the corner, people in social situations, there's the basketball, sports, fantasy. This is all about branding, wrapping the product in a mantle of positivity and fantasy. as opposed to talking about actual product characteristics. So does this look familiar to anyone? I think the Newport Alive with Pleasure is very is echoed in the Live for Now slogan. And these are tobacco marketing that use the same branding techniques to up the profile of their products with youth. So the problem, in short, is that campaigns that target teens like Live for Now are really designed to minimize concern about health risk at the same time that the adult world and the public health community is trying to get kids to drink fewer sugary drinks. So is consumer protection law ready to deal with the problem? Maybe. There's little consumer protection law precedent involving teens. Soda marketing to teens, as I noted before, focuses on fantasy and branding instead of actual product characteristics. This is typically referred to in legal speak as puffery, and puffery is not actionable under federal consumer protection laws. So distinguishing, making the argument that fantasy and branding are not only effective and misleading or unfair or deceptive can be undercut by defenses around puffery. There are, however, two major lines of cases involving teens and branding. One line of cases involves alcohol and the other involves tobacco. The alcohol cases were brought in the 2000s. I don't know if anyone's familiar with this line of cases. There were a series of deception cases that alleged that alcohol marketing that targeted youth was responsible for underage alcohol purchases. And the cases were structured in such a way that they were brought on behalf of parents. They were brought as deception claims, so they were arguing that these branding campaigns and the development of youth-focused products like Alka-Pops were deceptive to teens, and that's why they purchased products. And in order for something to be deceptive under the law, it has to be likely to mislead a reasonable consumer acting reasonably under the circumstances in a material way or in a way that impacts their decision to purchase. When marketing targets a specific audience, you should look at it from the perspective of the target audience. The fact that these cases were brought on behalf of parents instead of teens was a major problem. All of the cases ultimately were dismissed for lack of standing and then also for failure to state a claim. So courts decided, even on the face of the very initial papers that were filed with the court, the pleadings, that the allegations could never sustain a cause of action. And so they were dismissed. And I thought this quote was really telling. One of the things that was most enlightening about looking at this line of alcohol cases, I apologize, this is so long, I'm going to read half of it. My mic went out. I can just talk really loud. Okay, it's back. courts were just incredulous that this marketing was effective in getting teens to want to purchase alcohol. I don't know why this is going on. Okay. I can just talk loud. Or just ignore it. I don't know if I'm stepping on something. Okay. So the second half of the quote said, while minors may be, this is from an Eastern District of Michigan, the court in the Eastern District of Michigan, 2007, I want to note, this is a recent case. While minors may be considered incompetent to handle the effects of the intoxication, there's no presumption that minors are incompetent to watch advertising, handle the messages included therein, or that they are incompetent to understand that underage drinking is illegal. Not a friendly response to this class of consumers. So the tobacco cases, which were bought in the 90s, and arguably at a time when there was a lot of focus and work that had been done to lay the ground for tobacco cases, were brought as unfairness claims. And unfairness is a marketing tactic that causes... that causes or is likely to cause a substantial injury to consumers, which is not reasonably avoidable by consumers themselves and isn't outweighed by countervailing benefits to consumers or competition. This line of cases predominantly had to do with Joe Camel, and courts were much more receptive. This is a quote from a California case that was eventually knocked out as a result of a preemption, but I Anyway, it's a useful opinion because it gives some insight into judicial thinking around marketing to youth. And it says, targeting minors with tobacco marketing exploits them by luring them into an unhealthy and potentially life-threatening addiction before they have achieved the maturity necessary to make an informed decision whether to take up smoking despite its health risks. And you see implicit in that some recognition that teens' brains are different, right? They can't make informed decisions. So they need protection. So if we apply unfairness standards to soda campaigns marketing teens, because in looking at the case law, unfairness feels like a much more viable theory than deception. Making out a deception case when you don't have actual factual claims can be very difficult. So applying unfairness standards, the risk of substantial injury. So there's great research done here at Children's Hospital in Boston by Ludwig et al. One additional sugary drink serving per day increased the risk of overweight and obesity by 60% amongst 12-year-olds. If you look at this presentation by Coke about their commitment to build drinkership, the 304 in the teen group is the annual core brand sparkling 8-ounce servings per capita consumption. So you have 304, and they, through their recruitment efforts, which is just marketing, right, they want to incrementally increase that consumption. So they're looking to increase per capita consumption. The marketing is designed to get more servings out the door. So if we know that increased consumption of sugary beverages is linked to increased rates of chronic disease, then I think you can argue that there's a potential risk of substantial injury in these campaigns that heavily target teens. Are these campaigns reasonably avoidable by teen consumers? Well, not if the soda companies can help it, right? This is a quote from a senior marketing executive from Coca-Cola, Wendy Clark. She said, quote, when she was describing a component of their Olympics campaign that targeted teens using music, they said, quote, when you look at all the data out there of what is important to teens, sports, music, mobile, social, we want to be right there. So that's their whole goal, to be right there. And are these campaigns beneficial to consumers or competition? I would say no. They're all for the most obesogenic category of products, full sugar Coke, full sugar Pepsi. They're not promoting the reformulated versions. They're looking to build core brand loyalty. So they're actually used as a way to cement loyalty to the portfolio of products. I think you could sort of argue that might be the long-term goal if you look at that curve over the lifespan of drinkership. But they're targeting teens with the worst category of their products. So I don't see any benefit to teen consumers or competition through that. So next steps. I thought for this audience I would kind of take some more public health next steps approaches. If there are any regulators in the audience or folks who are interested in working on these issues, I think that really thinking about these through a critical legal lens is incredibly important. But there are also some precursors that I think we as a community would be really great to work on together. And so building a greater awareness of how marketers exploit teen biological and psychosocial development is key. Really laying the foundation for understanding why the teen brain makes them make different choices and how the food industry is exploiting that. Building the evidence base for the impact of soda marketing on teen brand preferences and consumption. There's a great paper that came out of California Harold Goldstein's shop, I think just last week, showing that teen, whereas other children's consumption of sugary drinks had been going down, teen consumption had actually increased. And so really documenting these consumption trends, because as we saw in the cases, there really is some deep skepticism in the judiciary about whether or not marketing works at all, which is almost hard to believe, but it's there, so we need to deal with it. And then denormalization. So this is something that you folks are familiar with if you've worked on tobacco or any other harmful products or harmful behaviors that you're trying to change. But I would love it if we would make it socially unacceptable for major mainstream companies to publicly celebrate targeting teens with full sugar soda marketing. They just revel in this. If you see presentations that they give to their marketing colleagues or different investor groups, and even the products that they bring. So if the marketing woman from Coke is speaking to an older marketing conference, she carries a Diet Pepsi with her. When she speaks to the youth-oriented conferences, she brings the full sugar Coke. So, and puts it on the podium, right? So everything communicates, that's their slogan. So we need to really hew away at this celebration of targeting vulnerable teens with unhealthy products. So I want to acknowledge our funder and my co-authors, Dr. Daynard and Brendan Burke, and this is solely our responsibility, the content. Thank you. Any questions? Okay.
So just in terms of denormalization, so
yeah.
I mean, these are multi-billion dollar international companies that you're up against, and often,
yeah.
Underfunded public health agencies mm-hmm. and government agencies, so there are interest groups that don't quite have that those resources. So how, what do you think of as a strategy for denormalization?
Well, I think if we can be right there when there are any claims or PR efforts around soda companies promoting physical activity or their health promotion strategies, to pair that with, well, why are you targeting the same people that you want to protect from health harm with your least healthy beverages? So that should be just at the tip of your tongue. Okay, you know, you want to run a some kind of physical activity campaign, but why are you at the same time marketing the least healthy beverages to kids? That's what I would ask. Yeah, go ahead.
Are you proposing that are there any regulatory or legal strategies that can become more about awareness building and
deregulation? Well, I mean, we looked at the consumer protection law, and if there was the willingness to bring an unfairness claim around some of these campaigns, I think there is the Pellman case, which some of you may be familiar with, that was actually brought as deception in New York City around fast food marketing to children. That was really focused on nutritional information, so I didn't focus on it here because we were looking at cases involving branding. But that case actually is very instructive. The judge who wrote the opinion goes through how to build a deception case. So I think really building these theories in a more comprehensive way with using a very sort of sharp legal mind is important. And anything that can be done to sort of pair industry representations about their business conduct to the public to try to shroud themselves in positivity and for public relation purposes with their actual marketing practices to vulnerable consumers, I think it would be really important. Yeah, so I think that, I love to see people who are willing to go out on a limb and fight the good fight, so I don't want to tear down the tobacco cases too much, or the alcohol cases too much, but those complaints were crafted very broadly. They named 15 or 20 alcohol industry defendants, and they talked very broadly about youth sort of underage drinking and how this marketing drove purchases, but in a very general way. And so I think if you're going to try to bring these cases, you need to really frame it in terms of including language about specific techniques that are designed to capitalize on the developmental phase of teens. And that needs to be built in right from the beginning of any kind of litigation strategy to lay that foundation for the court. Because if you just go in and say, hey, look, they're spending all this money on marketing and they sold more products, that doesn't seem to be enough.
Have more questions at the end that you can ask of all the panelists. So thank you, Kara.